You're listening to Manx Radio, and I'm Judith Lay, welcoming you to the podcast of The Manx Sky at Night with Howard Parkin.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
And that's the familiar music that tells us it's once again time to welcome everyone's favourite astronomer, Howard Parkin, for this month's look at the Manx sky and all things space-related. Howard's not available to come into the studio this month, so here, as we say, is a programme we prepared earlier, but not too much earlier, though, just a couple of days ago. So, faster my Howard, and over to you.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to our programme again. It's great to be here, and a great chance to have a look at what's visible in the sky in the month of August. Well, August is a great month for us astronomers because the sky starts to get darker. We get beyond what we call astronomical twilight in about the 4th of August. So that means that officially it's dark from about midnight to about 2 o'clock. So it gives us a chance to see some of the brighter stars in the night sky. That said, there have been a number of sightings. People have said to me they've seen some bright stars in the sky. And these will be the three stars of what we call the summer triangle, the stars Deneb, Vega, and Altair. These are three of the stars that make up the summer triangle, which rises in the western sky, and sorry, in the eastern sky, and then slowly sets in the west as we go through the summer. It really is quite distinctive because there are only three bright stars in the sky. There is a fourth one, Arcturus, and Arcturus is the one that's found by finding the handle of the plough and following the handle of the plough down until you come to a bright star called Arcturus. And just to make it even more confusing, there is a star on the horizon called Spica. And Spica is the star that represents the principal star in the constellation of Virgo, which is the constellation of autumn. You see this in autumn, and it denotes the harvest. And the word Spica denotes the fact that she's holding in her hand a spike of wheat. Now, this is all very significant, but there is a real special thing going to happen in the month of August, which is, of course, what I would regard as probably the second best meteor shower that we ever get every year. And this is the Perseid meteor shower. The Perseid meteor shower peaks every year on and around August the 12th. But with it peaking on August the 12th, it means that you can look a few days before and a few days after, and it doesn't really matter as long as you're looking towards the area of the constellation of Perseus. And Perseus is one of these constellations that rises in the autumn. So therefore, although the constellation will be below the horizon at around 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, in August, the constellation means that the shower means that the meteors rise from Perseus and so can rise up above the horizon. So just keep your eyes peeled towards the eastern horizon any time from, I would say, from about the 8th or 9th of August right through to about the 20th, but with a real definite peak around the 12th. You can expect to see as many as 100 meteors an hour, which means roughly one a minute if you work it out on 60 an hour. It is always a great display, and even though the moon will interfere to a degree this year, it doesn't really matter because the moon will be coming from the opposite horizon. So give it a go. And what I always say to people to do is to look for the Perseid meteors. And if you go outside with your sun chair, because this time of the year it's not as cold as it is in the middle of the winter, go outside with your sun chair and sit in your back garden and take a drink with you, preferably non-alcoholic. And every time you see a meteor, raise your glass or your cup to the stars and say, that's another one I've seen tonight. The other thing that is important to mention is that the planets were all visible in the January sky in the early part of this year. And there's a bit of fuss in the media about the fact that all the planets could be seen at once. You could get all the planets right across the sky from the sunset in the west right through to the eastern horizon. Well, that really was a load of rubbish. Yes, they were technically speaking visible, but Uranus, Neptune and Mercury are hardly visible to the naked eye. We did have Jupiter, we did have Saturn and Venus and Mars visible, but they were strung out right across the sky. And what's happened since then, of course, is the Earth has gone round the Sun on its annual journey. And what's happened now is the only one left in the western sky is the planet Mars. And Mars is very quickly disappearing into the twilight sky in the west. So as a result, you're not really going to see any planets in the evening sky. However, if you're an early riser and you get up and just look up towards the eastern horizon, you'll not fail to see this beautiful, brilliant white star, which is, of course, the planet Venus. And not far from Venus, you've also got towards the Sun, so further down towards the eastern horizon, you've got the planet Jupiter. Saturn is actually visible around midnight, but a lot fainter than all the other stars. And Saturn is, strictly speaking, in the morning sky, but it crosses over into the evening sky at around midnight in early August. So those are the main sights we get to see in the month of August in the night sky. But of course, there's lots of other features we can see. And one of the things I'd like to mention at this point is the fact that a lot of people say to me, where's the plough? What's happened to the plough? Well, the plough circles the pole. And I don't know if I've mentioned this before. I know it's one of those things that's pretty fundamental to astronomy. But the pole star, which is known as Polaris, sits directly above the northern horizon. And if you want to know what your latitude is on the Earth from the Isle of Man, then just measure the height of Polaris above your horizon. And the star Polaris is 55 degrees above our horizon. Easy to measure because your fist held at arm's length gives you 10 degrees. So 5.5 fists gives you the height of the star Polaris. So if you don't know what you're looking for, look due north, use a compass, or look towards Ramsey, depending where you live, unless you live in Ramsey, of course, in which case you look towards the point of Ayr in Scotland, and see if you can find a star 5.5 fists directly up. That's the pole star, Polaris, the principal star in the constellation of Ursa Minor, or the Little Bear. It's often called the Little Bear, but sometimes called, especially in places like America, as the Little Dipper. And to find the plough, which is the name we give to the group of stars that are at the back end, the back and the tail of the Great Bear, or Ursa Major, they are going to be to the right of Polaris, or above it almost, depending what time of night you're looking. And the two end stars in Ursa Major are called Merak and Dubhe, on the edge of the bowl of the plough. They point directly down to Polaris. And what happens is the plough literally rotates around the pole star, the pole. This is the star that would be directly over the North Pole if you're observing from the Arctic Circle. So basically, the Polaris sits directly above the pole, and depending where you are on the Earth, it will always be your latitude. If you're lucky enough to be on the equator getting a suntan or whatever, Polaris will be almost sitting directly on the horizon. But that doesn't mean you won't see the stars of Ursa Major, because they'll be above and to the right of it. But the other times of the year, of course, from the equator, you won't see it. And it's a very good way of identifying where you are with astronomy. I always get very confused when I'm doing astronomy elsewhere in the world, because the stars just don't appear in their familiar positions and patterns to me. And it takes a little bit of a while to understand exactly what's going on. So that's how we see the stars of the plough, Ursa Major, or the Big Dipper, depending what you want to call it. But the pole star sits perfectly in that pattern and is easily seen, as I said, measured above your horizon, 5.5 fists above the northern horizon, gives you the star Polaris. Just to finish off talking about Ursa Minor, I can say that Ursa Minor is the same shape as Ursa Major or the plough, except the tail curves the other way. And as a result, we don't see it in the same way. But the stars are much, much fainter than those of the plough. Incidentally, talking about the plough, if you look at the middle star of the handle of the plough, you'll notice with good eyesight that there's actually two stars in this specific location. The other star is a double star. It's what we call an optical double star. The two stars are not connected in any way. They're just in a line of sight effect. And the two stars are called Alcor and Mizar. And Alcor itself, it is the fainter one of the two, is sometimes regarded as being the pot that the bears are going to get cooked in, because the Native Americans see the bear as a bear that's being hunted, and bears don't have tails. So the three Indians are chasing the bear. The three stars of Ursa Major's tail are three Indians chasing the bear across the sky, and the middle one, Mizar, is holding the pot with which they're going to cook him in when they catch him and kill him. Wonderful stories in the sky, and most of the mythology and folklore of the sky has been made up over thousands of years, and it denotes the fact that people have been looking skyward for so long, and basically they make up tales and legends and stories. And that leads me nicely onto the story of Andromeda, because the story of Andromeda and Perseus and Pegasus and the Queen Cassiopeia and King Cepheus, that's a wonderful tale. But I think we'll leave that one for next month when most of those constellations are more clearly visible in our night sky. So that basically gives you a good run through of what's visible in our night sky for the month of August.
Well, that was quite some report, Howard. You barely paused for breath. But you didn't mention my two favourite things. So, first of all, are we getting towards the end of the season for noctilucent clouds?
Yes, Judith. The season for noctilucent clouds for 2025 is coming to an end now, but we have had some spectacular displays in that lovely weather we had a bit earlier. We had a wonderful period where we saw quite a few noctilucent clouds, and you've still got a chance of seeing them before it starts to get too dark earlier in the evening. So remember, look towards the western or the eastern horizon before after sunset or before sunrise, and you might see these weird silvery, bluey clouds way up in the atmosphere. And of course, they're being illuminated by the sun, which is below the horizon. They really are quite special and quite eerie to look at. And I'd recommend anyone who's interested to have a look for those and wonder what they are. And they're noctilucent clouds. The word noctilucent, of course, means night shining in Latin.
Thanks, Howard. And I think, if we're honest, we're all paying a bit more attention to the night sky in the hope of seeing another aurora. So what are the chances, Howard?
Yes, we did have a major auroral peak earlier this year, and this is the peak of the 11-year cycle for the aurora, or for the solar activity, to be more precise, which results in us getting decent aurora. We had a decent aurora in May last year, and we had another very big display in October the 10th last year. I remember it very, very well, clearly seen from the Isle of Man. And statistically, we always get decent displays of aurora, or more solar activity, again to be precise, you get more solar activity when it has gone past the peak period of solar activity. So therefore, we have got a chance, or a very realistic chance, of getting some decent displays of aurora in the next few months. So keep your eyes and ears peeled. There are a whole host of different websites. Just put aurora prospects into the internet and you'll get all sorts of stuff from either Aurora Watch UK, or the one that I use quite a lot is the one in Alaska, which is very, very good and gives you lots of graphics for that. Well worth looking out for, and very, very good chance we might see some decent aurora from the Isle of Man.
Which would be wonderful. So we remain hopeful. Right, whilst you get your breath back, Howard, let's have our music break. And believe it or not, Mary Black has found a brand new star.
Every now and then you like to take it easy, sit right back and view the situation. The future is brighter, so we'll be riding on the crest of a wave. Goodbye to all your troubles, change of heart, the world will start today. It's a new beginning, see it shine. Thinking that you'll end up crying, maybe all you need is to get away from friends and the walls around you. Find a shore, step into the sun. Goodbye to all your troubles, change of heart, the world will start today. It's like a new beginning, see it shine.
You're listening to The Manx Sky at Night with astronomer Howard Parkin. And in the first part of the programme, Howard was describing, as he usually does, what we can see in our night skies over the island during this, the month of August. That's, of course, weather permitting. Our music break was Mary Black's Brand New Star. And I wonder if there'll be any new stars, sightings or launches, as Howard reports on all things space-related. Howard, last month you were a bit depressed due to budget cuts.
I was quite depressed after the show last month. The NASA budget had been proposed to be hammered, literally a huge, huge drop in their budget. But realising what's going on and looking into it, you know, it's not just about NASA and the United States. There are a lot of other people very, very heavily involved in the space industry, not just countries, but also private enterprise. And I just thought I'd go through and make a list of all the various spacecraft, for instance, on the way to various bodies in our solar system. NASA launched their Psyche mission. Their Psyche mission is to go to an asteroid in the asteroid belt, which is thought to be almost solid metal. This mission was launched in October 2023, and the spacecraft will get there in August 29. And that spacecraft is very much on the way, is in budgeted for. And fortunately, when the budget is allocated for a spacecraft to actually get launched and get on the way, it is almost always going to get funded through to at least arrival. It's the period after arrival where they might knock it back. But that one is underway at the moment. We've also got another NASA mission. It's launched in October 24, the Europa Clipper mission. The Europa Clipper mission is going off to Jupiter. It launched in October last year and won't get to Jupiter until April 2030. And when it does, it'll be investigating Europa and maybe looking for signs that there is as much ice around Europa as we believe. And as a consequence, that ice may be able to be sustain some form of microbial life. That's one of the big missions for that one. Just prior to that, 18 months prior to that, the European Space Agency JUICE mission, called JUICE because it's Jupiter's Icy Moons Explorer. They're great with their acronyms, all these space industry people. That one launched in April 23, not getting to Jupiter till later than the Europa Clipper mission, not getting there till July 2031. But again, that's exploring the idea that life may possibly exist around the moons of Jupiter, in particular Europa. As well as that, we've got the Chinese have launched another spacecraft to an asteroid. We had the American mission not long ago, which actually deflected a moonlet, Dimorphos. It deflected this moonlet, and now that's being investigated. And indeed, another launch to that was sent last October by the Europeans. But the Chinese version of this launched only a couple of months ago, on the 25th of May. And this one's actually going to get samples from an asteroid as well, and potentially bring back samples from that and also a comet. Not to be outdone, the Indian Space Agency, ISRO, they're planning a launch of a spacecraft to Venus. This is launching in 2028, so it's a long way off, but it's well underway. And the Indians are also planning their own manned launch, which I'll talk about in just a moment. The Chinese are also planning a sample return mission to the planet Mars. And of course, that has caused a lot of furore in America because the Americans are currently collecting samples on Mars. They're using the Perseverance rover to actually collect samples from Mars, and they're meant to be bringing them back. But the budget has spiraled out of control on that one. And that mission is very much, I won't say cancelled, but very, very, very much under threat. But in the meantime, the NASA mission, which was going to go in 2030, bringing back samples by about 32, the Chinese have just tweaked the tail of the American Space Agency by announcing that their sample return mission is actually going to go 2 years earlier. That is launching in 2028, bringing back samples from Mars as early as 31. So I think that has a lot to do with the political decisions that might get made in the United States. So you can see that that's just a handful of missions. There are about five of them I've listed there. There are others, and there are other ones on the way, and there are others on the drawing board to go. We're even talking about launching a spacecraft to Uranus now to investigate the moons of Uranus. It's all go. And yes, budgetary issues come and go, as they do with any aspect of life, but the space industry is thriving. And the other way in which the space industry is thriving, of course, is the private industry. Private industry are really going ahead with a whole host of different organizations. We all know very well about SpaceX and their Starship. And incidentally, the next Starship launch is scheduled for early August. The Starship 10, number 9, if you may recall, got off the pad and everything else, but exploded. They've had a few failures recently, not noticeably. The launch of number 10 was put back dramatically when they were testing the vehicle, and it blew up on the pad and destroyed part of the pad as well and had to be rebuilt. But number 10 is nearly ready for launching now, and the estimated launch date is as early as the 4th of August, which is only a few days ago, literally. So look out for that one. But as well as SpaceX, who are thriving and launching spacecraft all over the place, you've also got Virgin Galactic, who got their space plane, which goes suborbital, and also the Blue Origins. Blue Origins' next mission, number 34, is due to go in just a few weeks' time. The exact date has not been scheduled yet, but there are all sorts of plans for it. As well as that, I've already mentioned the Indian Space Agency, ISRO, are planning an unmanned launch of their vehicle, which will carry men and women into space. And if this unmanned launch is successful in late 2025, they are scheduling in the first quarter of 2027 to launch their first vehicle carrying Indian astronauts from launch from Indian soil, making them the fourth nation in the world to launch men and women into space. NASA, in the meantime, are also planning their Artemis II mission, which is now scheduled for launch probably in February 2026. And there are a whole host of other space agencies who are planning stuff. There's Rocket Lab, there's Axiom Space, who are planning to build a space station and attach it to the International Space Station. You've got Sierra Space, who've got their Dream Chaser reusable space plane, a much, much smaller version of the space shuttle. And that has now been contracted by them, or by NASA, for them to supply the International Space Station. And we've got Firefly, we've got Nanoracks, we've got One Space, Space Adventures, Asteroid Mining Ventures, people actually looking at the possibility of mining asteroids and getting material back from them at a cheaper cost than mining these elements on the Earth. You'd almost think this is science fiction, but this is the sort of stuff that people are looking into. And we've also got space hotels, we've also got lunar module being built, all sorts of stuff. There's very much a huge amount of business going on in the space industry. I think we've reached a point now where the space industry is very, very buoyant. And despite budgetary constraints on a national level, private industry are realizing that space is the new frontier that can be exploited and money can be made from it. When we look back 100 years ago at the early days of aviation with the Wright brothers and Amelia Earhart and things like that, we're now at the stage now, I think about 10, 15 years on from that, if you like the equivalent period, where commercial space exploitation is becoming more and more important. And one thing that has been mentioned in science fiction many, many times is the possibility of suborbital space planes. You launch from wherever you want to launch from. We'll say London in this case, although there's no launch pad near London, but you launch from a city or near a city, like a spaceport, which is built, purpose-built, and you go into orbit, but you don't remain in orbit other than for half an orbit, and then you come back down again. Getting up and getting down is the problem, but the actual transit time, for instance, London to Australia, would probably be about just under an hour. It doesn't bear thinking about the idea, or it does bear thinking about how wonderful it would be to be able to get to Australia in probably just a couple of hours. That's the future. That's what we're talking about here. And it's great to be able to keep you informed of everything that's going on, and I'll continue to do so.
Howard, we're counting on you. Thank you, Howard Parkin, for a packed programme with so much information there. And if you'd like to take a second listen or recommend The Manx Sky at Night to a friend, you'll find the podcast available at manxradio.com immediately after this broadcast.
I look forward to talking to you all at the end of next month, and we'll keep going and tell you what else is going on in the world of space and in astronomy.
Thanks, Howard.
Thank you very much indeed.
Resident astronomer Howard Parkin, Fast Am I.
Fast Am I.
The Nation State.